Welcome to Saving You is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction podcast. Loving someone with an addiction is a life of chaos. This podcast is to help you take back your power and build strength, hope, and restore peace in your life. We use the science and art of positive psychology, professionals in their field, along with personal stories of hope, resilience, and strength. We hope you can discover how the courage to focus on you can help put your life back together. When you are in a place of exhaustion, hopelessness, and emptiness, we are a community that knows all too well the turmoil that comes from loving someone with an addiction. We are here to help you compassionately struggle well. Hey there, Andrea Seidel here. I hope you're doing as good as can be. I am bursting with excitement because I want to share some incredible news with you. And after what feels like completely forever, my book, Saving You is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction, is finally available in audiobook format. So this is a game changer. This is amazing because now you can listen to it wherever you go. Like if you're on a walk, a stroll, or driving in your car, or just chilling at home, you can pop my book into your ears. And I'm so excited. It's available right now on Google Play as well as Spotify, and more audiobook distributors will be picking it up soon. But I just wanted to share the news with you because I've been so excited about this. I'm thrilled because I want to make this resource more accessible to everyone. So my mission is to reach those who need it the most. And now, through the power of audiobooks, we can spread the word, we can break down barriers, we can reach those people that, you know, need to hear the love and support through the message of our community. And so please, please, please spread the word and let's get this vital information into the ears now of those who really, really need to and can benefit from the content. So together we can make a difference. So I am so excited and just sending you heaps of hugs and love and compassion through the line. And I'm just really excited. So if you haven't listened or purchase the book, Saving You is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction. That is the first book of this series. It's all about building your resilience and taking back your power so you can focus on you. And it's not about your addicted loved one at all. So this book is so powerful. So now is another wonderful opportunity. If you didn't feel like reading the book, you can actually listen to the book now as well. So amazing. Now, Tainted Love is coming that way as well. They're all processing. So right now, the first ones that are available are the original book, which is Saving You is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction. So, okay, today we are talking about this idea of escaping the exhaustion of trying to make them see their addiction. I cannot tell you how many times I would be, you know, filming him or taking pictures to document the time that he's still in the garage and, like, you know, trying constantly to prove to him, like, look it, there's a problem here. And almost like also proving to myself, like, you know, Googling things. It's like, what does it mean for them to have an addiction, right? And it was amazing because I was exhausted. I was exhausted trying to make him see the problem, to see the addiction, to see that this is a huge problem in our relationship as well as within him. And so I just wanted to talk about how challenging and emotionally draining it is to obviously witness someone that we care about struggle with addiction. And what happens too is when they're resistant to acknowledging the problem or they're resistant to seeking help, it is such a situation that really brings about emotions of frustration and sadness and helplessness. And for me, a lot of anger as well. And so we do this, right? We do this to ourselves because we're trying to make them see the problem. And so what we're doing is with the addicted loved one, they're resisting the problem. They're resisting facing the problem. They're probably in denial. Denial is a defense mechanism that allows them to avoid the basically uncomfortable truth of what's going on, the truth about their behavior, and the truth about the consequences of their behavior. They're even denying that. So it's a way of protecting themselves from the shame, the guilt, and the fear that comes from the accompanying addiction. And so admitting that they have a problem can, for them, feel very overwhelming and terrifying, and they might be even in denial and not really thinking they have a problem. And so this is why it's so hard. So addiction also alters their brain chemistry. It impairs their judgment and their decision-making abilities. And it might make it even harder and harder for them to see or to recognize the extent of the problem. And they might not know that they should be taking steps to address the problem, because they might genuinely believe that they don't have a problem, or they're convincing themselves that they don't have a problem, or they're denying the fact that they do, or they know it, but they don't want to admit it. So you can see how, as a bystander, that it can feel very frustrating and very exhausting to continuously try to make them see the truth. We're trying to make them see the reality of the situation. And so it's like, you know, it's like hitting a wall, or talking to a wall, hitting it over and over again. It's like, so it's so important for us to recognize that you can't force someone to change. We cannot force someone to accept help. And especially if they're not ready. So if we're pushing too hard, or we're trying so hard, it can actually backfire and create so much resistance and actually cause us to become very, very stressed. So the whole message in this is that we need to focus on our own well-being and recognize that it's all about self-preservation. So if you're feeling like you turned into like the FBI and you're trying to like prove things or figure things out, or like show evidence of the addiction, and like, or even try to prove it to yourself, I just want to wrap you in love, because I was there, and a lot of the listeners and a lot of people in our support group are in the same situation. It's natural to do this. We want that person that we love to seek recovery. We want them to, you know, come back to the person that they were. And so taking care of ourselves emotionally and mentally is so essential. Maintain our own resilience. And so this might involve certain things, and we're going to talk about some things, right? We need to protect ourselves, right? We need to, we get sucked into the destructive behavior of addiction, and it is so hard because we only want the best for our loved ones. We're trying so hard to make them see what is going on, the realities and the truths, and we're making a case for it so that they'll see how terrible it is, and hope our cross fingers that they would seek recovery. So you can see where all this stress and frustration can come from. And it is so, so, so hard. And so how might we be exhausting ourselves? And that you probably don't need me to tell you this, but I just want to go through how and why it is that we're exhausting ourselves. So what was happening a lot for me is that I was always trying to document their behavior, his behavior, because he would, first of all, gaslight me and say it's not true. So then I was like, okay, well, I need to journal this, write this down, make evidence for it. Plus he would love bomb me. So the next day he would be all loving. And so sometimes I would forget about all the shit that I was being put through. And so I needed to document what was going on so I could see the truth of it as well. And so you might be taking videos of them, you know, still up drinking at like 5 a.m. in the morning, or, you know, you might take videos of them completely intoxicated or passed out on the floor, take pictures of that. And we do this because we're trying to find concrete evidence of the problem. We're trying to show them the impact of the problem. It's such a natural thing to do. It's a natural response. And it's so natural to feel frustrated and It's just sometimes it's like you want evidence to back up what you're saying, because sometimes words alone aren't enough, right, to convey the seriousness of the situation. So we're constantly gathering evidence, information perhaps, and trying to make a case for it. Maybe we're, I know me, I was out in the car at like 3 a.m. trying to find where he is, and leaving my kids at home alone. Anyway, so it's amazing how we try to make this case to indeed verify that there is a problem, that they have a problem, and that here's what your problem is causing, and the whole disruption of your problem and your addiction. And so when we're constantly doing this, it can be so exhausting. It can be so emotionally draining. So let's say, you've been taking videos of your loved ones as evidence of their addiction. You might spend sleepless nights monitoring their actions. You might be waiting up for them. You might be watching as they slip up so you can capture them on camera or document it in your journal, or you might be like trying to find them at what bar are they at or whose house are they at, that kind of thing. So this private investigating is so common. Like you might find yourself like showing them the videos or replaying the videos, or like, look at the time you came in last night. Like I took a picture of the clock, or, all these things. And you're hoping that they'll finally see the truth. But I have to say, despite all these efforts, your loved one is going to continue perhaps to deny or downplay their problem. That is the nature of addiction. They might offer excuses. They might offer explanations. They might explain out their behaviors, right? They might even dismiss it altogether and say, oh, it's not that bad, or, and just it'd be in denial. And so this leaves us feeling like, oh my gosh, like exhausted, frustrated, defeated, right? Even when we have all this evidence, when we've done all this research. And so the idea is that we can get very, very drained, and we're going to get to a point where it's like, oh my gosh, we're trying to have all this evidence to prove our point. But this cycle of documenting, confronting them, being met with resistance, and this all can become this never-ending loop that is so draining and so exhausting. And it takes its toll on our mental health, on our physical health, on our emotional health. And, and so it can start just to consume our thoughts, our emotions all the time. We can ruminate, worry, all these things, leaving us feeling overwhelmed and helpless. So in situations like this, it's so important to recognize when your efforts are becoming counterproductive. So that means it's taking its toll on your well-being. So while it's natural to want to help our loved ones, to convince them to seek help, to see how, try to show them the problem, we also need to prioritize our own self-care and practice self-preservation. We need to prioritize our emotional health. So instead of constantly trying to gather evidence and make a case for things, we want to consider other things that we can do. We want to kind of break the insanity and just start by setting some boundaries to protect ourselves from the negative effects of their addiction. We need to recognize and kind of step back from trying to change or control or find evidence for and prove to them the problem, because they're not going to see it. And it's going to really keep draining us. So and so just change and acknowledge their problem, their addiction, and not ever admit to it. They might realize the problem tomorrow, but it's not the problem to give them the evidence to and trying to get them to acknowledge the problem. Draining. So all you can do take good care of yourself through this process. So let's think of some of these powerful ways that we can not get sucked into this case building exhaustion. We'll call it case building exhaustion because that's what I was doing. I was building a case to make him realize, okay, so, you know, it's not normal to be sitting in the attic smoking with a bloody runny nose at like 4 a.m. while you're drinking beer. But or like 6 a.m. even like I'd always be making this case, like, you know, you do know that that's not normal, or like, you do know that this is a problem, right? You do know that you're not sleeping and you're staying up all night. Like, you do realize, and I kept making a case for it. And then I would go and I would search online to see evidence that there, that this is in fact an addiction, because I almost didn't believe it myself. Cause it was like, you know, he said, there's no problem, this and that. Anyway, so let's think about some powerful ways that we can not get sucked in to this case building exhaustion, right? Trying to prove that there's a problem. So obviously setting boundaries or rules to live by, or a mantra that you can follow, can be really, really powerful ways to avoid getting sucked into that exhaustion of trying to make that case. So obviously, first things first, you know me, I love the practice of self-compassion. First thing is, I want you to recognize that it's normal to do this. It's normal to feel exhausted, overwhelmed, and angry in this situation. So be kind to yourself. Acknowledge your feelings without any judgment, without any judgment, and focus on acceptance. Recognize acceptance is huge, because acceptance doesn't mean you're condoning and accepting what's going on. Acceptance just is about recognizing, yes, there is a problem here, and the problem is addiction, right? And then just accepting the fact that there is a problem, and you don't need to prove it. You don't need to provide evidence for it. You don't need to prove it. You don't need to control that or change someone else's actions. We need to focus on accepting the reality of the situation. If you think there's a problem with addiction, there probably is a problem with addiction. If you are noticing behavior that is changing and out of normal, out of character, and it's slowly going down a downward spiral, you are dealing with a problem. And an addiction is messy, and it can get worse and it can get better. There's ups and downs. It's complex. So acceptance is we don't need to make a case for it all. We don't need to go and find proof. And of course, do your research, and knowledge is power, so we can understand things. But what we want to do is focus on this idea of acceptance. Acceptance that we can't control or change someone else's addiction, and that we need to focus on accepting the reality of the situation and directing our energy towards what we can control. So what can we control? We can control our thoughts. We control our feelings. We control our actions. We can control quite a bit in our life, how we care for ourselves, how we maybe have some really amazing self-care practices, going for walks. And so the other thing you want to do is cultivate patience. So recognize what you're going through and have patience for yourself. Understand that this is really hard, and that, you know, it is something that is going to try your patience. When you love someone with an addiction and you love them so much, and you are hoping they will seek recovery, we need to be patient, because and watch what's going on. That pressure of building the case so much, because that'll help us a lot. So also recognize that, you know what, you can't single-handedly figure this all out for someone. I remember I was doing everything. I was buying essential oils to help him with his sinus infections, and I was trying to boost his immune system, and I was like trying to figure out what could possibly be wrong. This was before I knew about the addiction. And so please, please, please understand that we can't single-handedly fix another human. They do have a problem. It's addiction. And even if they aren't admitting to active addiction, or you're not quite sure 100% if it is active addiction, but there is maybe substance use disorder, or there is something going on there, chances are you know what you're dealing with. So what we want to do is just recognize that, okay, like, we can't single-handedly deal with this. So we might want to reach out for some support, reach to support groups like the SYKM, Saving You is Killing Me support group on Facebook. Facebook private group is so powerful. If you haven't joined us there, we have so many amazing people in that community and everyone supports each other. It's an upward spiral because we've all been there. We know what it's like. And so we're there just to embrace you with so much compassion and love. So make sure you join us there. And so practicing detachment. Now, here is a huge one. This is what I needed to do. Detachment doesn't mean that you're disconnecting from your loved ones. You're not, you're just, what you're doing is just involves letting go of the need to fix their behaviors, to the need to make a case, to show them what's going on, the need to, like, you know, so detachment is like, okay, like, you have a problem. And I literally had to put my hand up to him oftentimes and say, I'm not the one with the problem. You have a problem. And that's how I detached myself from it, right? It allowed for me to maintain my own emotional stability. It allowed me to maintain my own well-being while still being in this muck and this relationship. And all I could do is encourage him and, like, hope and, like, you know, let him, let his addiction take its course. And so, again, it's all I could do is focus that back on self-preservation. So let's talk a little bit about detachment in action, because it can be so hard, but it can be so liberating. I have to say, so liberating. It's hard, but liberating, both of them together. So it's basically, in the context of dealing with someone's addiction, it just is about finding this balance between caring for your loved one while maintaining your own emotional well-being. So you're caring for them, but you're also maintaining that space. So detachment is a boundary. So it can be so challenging because we love them so much. So we have this desire to help them get better. We have this desire to rescue, save, fix, help. And so it makes perfect sense. So that's why it's hard. But what we want to do is move a little bit away from the letting go of the desire to control or fix that other person's behavior. And this often goes against what is our natural instinct, especially when we care so deeply about someone. So let's talk about detachment and what it might look like, and have some examples for us. So setting boundaries, obviously, is you establish your clear boundaries of what behaviors you are and are not willing to tolerate. So you might decide that you, obviously, this is an obvious one, is that you won't lend them money, right? When they are, you know, or you won't engage in a conversation when they're intoxicated, right? That kind of thing. And so the other thing is that self-care, we want to let go of the need to control, detach, control, or change them. And that just letting go of that, constantly monitoring them to be in, like, you know, it's almost like taking a step back. It's like, this isn't my problem to fix. This isn't my burden to carry. My side of the street is clean. And I cannot tell you how powerful that detachment is. Hard to do, but it is so empowering, right? This is not my problem to fix. And so this idea is we want to let go of that urge to be constantly concerned about them. And we need to turn that concern back onto ourselves, right? And then detachment also means accepting that you can't dictate the outcome. This is something they have to do all on their own. This is so hard because it's scary. like watching my loved one go down in this terrible downward spiral and like get in a massive car accident too, probably because he was like, you know, in not in a place where he should be driving. It's like, it's so hard to watch it. It's really, really hard. So obviously detaching means accepting that we can't dictate the outcome, as scary as it is, right? And so this is hard. This is hard, right? Because then we're worried about them. We're constantly thinking about them. And, you know, so what we need to do is instead focus on our well-being and trust that, you know, things will work out exactly how they're supposed to, and that we have to just allow and detach, surrender to the outcome and the possible outcome. And that's so hard. So detachment can be so difficult, right? And painful at times, but it's so incredibly liberating, right? Letting go of the burden of trying to control or fix or save someone else's behavior. We just can't. So we free ourselves from that cycle of frustration, anger, exhaustion. We're reclaiming our own agency and autonomy in our life, our influence in our own lives of what we do have control over. And it just allows ourselves to focus back on our own happiness, back on our own growth, and back on our own fulfillment. So again, detachment, don't think of it as abandoning your loved one and just like turning your back from it. But what it is just detaching or disconnecting from them emotionally a little bit so it can buy you some space. So it's about finding a healthier, more sustainable way to navigate the relationship. So it's stepping back, not taking on that burden. It's not your burden to carry, right? And so honoring your needs, honoring what it is that you are needing for yourself, and turning that lens back and that focus back on you. Okay, so I love mantras, and I love, especially when we're in the muck and we're in tough moments, it's like we need these declarations or these mantras or like, and I don't like calling them boundaries because I find it gets kind of confusing. So mantras or rules to live by or like a declaration can be so powerful. Like, I will no longer try to make a case for his addiction. I know there's a problem. Like, that could be your mantra. Like, so one of my favorite mantras for detachment, especially during tough moments, is I release the need to control or fix. And I had to say that over and over again. I release the need to control or fix. This is his problem. And I would always put my hand up like and put it up like, this is his problem. Almost like keeping him away, his energy away. And I honor my own well-being. And that was so powerful. Like, I release the need. I can't save, fix, rescue him anymore. It's like, I have to trust the process of life. I'm honoring my own well-being here. So a declaration can also help. Like, you could say, I acknowledge the reality of his addiction, right? You could say, I acknowledge the reality of his addiction, or he has the problem. But I release myself from the burden of proving it. I know he has a problem. It's almost like I have to say to myself, he has a problem. I no longer need to prove it. I don't need to prove it to anyone else. I can see it firsthand. I used to have to prove it to his mom. And like, you know, when I was trying to get him help and this and that, I'm like, she didn't even believe me. Anyway, so that's a whole nother story. But the thing is that I, for my own sanity, I'm like, he has a problem, because I saw it firsthand. Like, and I didn't need to prove it. Like, you know, I could go through the list of all the behavior change and what he's doing. And like, you know, even though he's denying it, I know there's something up. And then I ask all his friends, I took all his friends, had phone calls with his friends. And the one that was in rehab told me that he has a problem, and all his other friends protected him and his addiction. Anyway, so you can see how mantras or the declaration can be so powerful. So I used to say, I release the need to control or fix. I trust in the process of life, and I honor my own well-being. Or I acknowledge the realities of his addiction, or that's his problem. He has a problem, but I release myself from the burden of proving it. He has a problem. I release myself from the burden of trying to prove it. I know he has a problem. And then the next step is the boundaries too. My focus is on nurturing my own peace and strength now, and just putting them up. Like I used to write them car. I used to put them in my day timer, and I would have these mantras and these declarations that really helped me take back my power. So I hope that's helpful for you too. So, oh my gosh, amidst the storm of addiction, please, please, please remember your own resilience, right? Your love and care are such a powerful force, but it's so sad we cannot mend what another person chooses to do. So your love and your care is so powerful, but it cannot be another person's problem. We can't fix them. We can't save them. And we need to just focus and choose on healing within ourselves. We can't do what we wish for them. We can't love hard enough, I used to always say. So trust in your capacity to offer, obviously, support without sacrificing your own peace, without sacrificing your own well-being, no longer making a case for things. If there's a problem, you see it, you don't need to prove it. It's there, right? The problem's there. You can see it. It's obvious. However, you no longer need to take that burden on your shoulders. So your journey is self-compassion, self-care, focusing on your strength, having the courage to focus on you and your self-preservation. So I'm here for you. I know how hard this is. You are not alone. This is so tricky and challenging. And so we want to escape the exhaustion of trying to make them see addiction. We want to escape the exhaustion of spinning our wheels, trying to make a case to prove the problem. We don't need to do that. It's going to come out all on its own. And I used to say that too, is actually, you know what? I used to ask for evidence, sign, show me, prove to me what's going on. And then, oh, boom, I would get a really good indication that yes, we are dealing with the problem here. So, okay, everyone, I'm just sending you love and hugs and huge amounts of compassion and love through the line. Check out the audio version of the book, Saving You Is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction. It's available on Google Play as well as Spotify right now. And slowly will trickle out with all the other books as well. And I'm sending you so much love and hugs. And I hope to see you in our private support group as well. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening. If you want additional support, you can head on over to our website at savingyouiskillingme.com, where we have a wonderful, supportive, compassionate community. We are here for you. You are not alone. We also have a private Facebook group and Instagram feed called Saving You Is Killing Me, Loving Someone with an Addiction. Be sure to subscribe here so you get the latest episodes. And, of course, share this with your community and your support groups or anyone that's going through this struggle so we can all work together to take our lives back and restore joy. Thank you so much for joining me, not only today, but week after week. Although I wish we were meeting under different circumstances, I'm so grateful that I get to show up for you and share these episodes so that we can go on this journey together. Until next week, sending hugs.